All right, and then we are back on with the Boss Croc himself.
The Targ. Targ Croc. That is like 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I had to stay until, 2 o'clock just to get this guy from the airport, so.
Yeah, it's now. I didn't sleep till 4.
Yeah, so you guys got a long day, too. You guys didn't sleep till tomorrow?
We leave late in the afternoon.
Sure.
We don't do that soft 5-star resort herping.
That's my kind of herping. I prefer the 5-star resort herping.
Well, I might have a place too in Costa Rica for you to go this
Yeah,
weekend,
so. Yeah, for sure.
But to those people who don't know, feel free to introduce yourself.
Chris Dieter, Crocodile Encounter owner, slave, whatever you want to call it, you know.
No, that's just what your wife calls you.
I either own it or it owns me, one or the other, you know.
So, yeah, first time Crocodile Encounter's been outside of Florida in, 25 years?
Crocfest. It's been there. They did try one, I believe, in Australia. I think it was a smaller one, but then as far as in the States, yeah, it's the first time it's been out of Florida. Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. But yeah, he has a snake display, and they were getting a little toasty here in the Texas heat. So,
got a couple ice packs.
Yeah, we put them in the living room, so that's where they were.
Yeah. So, how things been going so far?
It's been real good, been nice and steady. You know, a lot of the croc people will come in later for the dinner and the auction. You know, so croc fest is really two phases. You got the kind of general public phase where everybody comes in and, you know, sees the demonstrations and all that stuff. Then you have the
party crowd.
Party crowd, core croc people, the one that know how it works and they want to come in for the dinner and the actual auction part of it.
You get the ooh and all crowd, and then later at night you get the, all right, we're buying.
Exactly. So it's kind of...
How much am I forking over for a painting?
Correct. And there are some good paintings at this one. I mean, I'm like, wow, there's some good artwork back there this year.
So. Personally, I think the best item auction would be some mugs, but...
I mean, I did like the Smith & Wesson skull.
Yeah, that's really cool, too.
But good luck in being able to try and afford that. Everyone's going to be...
I'm a big fan of the artwork. You get to... Hold on one second. Somebody's asked me at the bar.
You made a comment earlier about Johnson. You said it's too boring. Why?
They're too small.
I like the bigger ones.
Yeah.
That's funny because when I had Graham Webb on, he said that they were the thinking man's crocodile. So
Graham Webb is old, and he's Australian, and you know he's got a little slant to his opinion there for sure. You know?
We all.
Yeah. But they're a nice crocodile. Like, all crocodiles are nice, you know. The young ones are.
But, I don't even have to swim with.
And, yeah, and they all get their fit. They all get their personal fans and everything like that. But the freshie to me has just always been kind of, I don't know, never been something I've really been all that interested in.
Great value brand. Great value brand.
There are people who really like them, and they have a place, man. I mean, if I had kept one, I guess one of the few we haven't kept, and I might change an opinion if I would keep them, you know. I really like these guys, but for the most part, I don't have a lot of desire to add them to the group.
What you like?
Yeah.
What about Mesotops?
We got them. Yeah, we had them for a long time, and we went off of them, and because we want to go to Mistima, and you know,
all the way, huh?
Yeah, so
yeah, I support it wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah, it's kind of a deal, but I like them. And ours were kind of a little bit shy. I mean, they eat off of tongs and everything, but they're kind of retiring, and there's nothing wrong with them. They're just another, you know, small.
Small and shy.
Yeah.
Two traits you don't really want.
No.
I don't want anything small and shy, so I'm going to move my Orinoco's out.
Well, that one, honestly, there's reasons for that, too.
Space, but...
Yeah, that was primarily space, because, like, when we first got into Orinoco's, like, 15 years ago, we were, like, one of the few places that had them. And then we ended up getting, like, 14 of them. And then as time has gone by, more and more places, because they kept breeding them, and so more and more places have them, and there really was no real need for us to keep a big group anymore. Whenever then Temistema was kind of doing what the Orinokers did 15 years ago, to where they needed a place to have them, you know, and so...
to have them and grow that captive.
Yeah, exactly. And so it just makes more sense to go ahead and have those now than it would, you know, the Orinoco group, which is pretty well represented now, you know, so... So that's the thinking behind that, you know. Yeah. So, Because you have to overwinter all these things.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you keep like an okrog and you got 14 of them, I mean, that's a lot of indoor space, and it really will prevent you from keeping some other stuff. Huh?
Yeah.
What Texas guy? Burke Burson? Yeah, I saw him. Him? Sorry about that.
Give people a little overview of like some coloration. It's crazy for a crocodile.
Yeah, they get that real cryptic coloration. And so, like, they blend in really good with like any kind of water that's kind of mottled, you know? Yeah. And
I made the joke that they look kind of like if you took a gharial and kind of morphed its features with a Johnson eye and then gave it like a Paleosuchus paint job.
Yeah, that's kind of very much, that's pretty accurate, honestly, as far as that goes. But I like them. Their personality is really cool. And when we first get them, they're a little bit shy, but they quickly get over it. And most of them are pretty punchy now, you know.
Yeah, but so. Just at this feeding show, just like, what, 5-10 minutes ago, after everyone went to the indoors, after the one outside took her chicken, she went ahead and started scratching her ear. Everyone missed out on it.
So. Yeah, no, they're cool. Yeah, they're real fun to watch. If you get, and there's one thing they do that's really neat. We call it the Tamistamus shake. And so you feed them, and they just do this crazy thing with their tail. They go like this, like super
like
fast.
Like a leopard gecko almost.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, super fast. We call it the Tamistamus shake. And I've not seen any other croc do it like that. It's really weird.
You see, like, gators, like, flick down their tail really fast, but that's usually when they're pissed off at another
gator. Yeah, they're not either. And they move, man, it's crazy, you know, when you get to see it, so.
It might be a communication adaptation for their dense habitat to live in the water.
Well, you know, they really don't know a whole lot about them, you know, as far as that goes. It's really, probably of all crocodilians, it's probably your least studied one, you know, so, I mean, I think it's probably...
Yeah.
Likely that's
even
the case.
Even less than in the Philippines, which is a basic croc, right?
Philippines are, they're well known for, the people that like them are light in the loafers, and, you know, they're typically, there's a lot of questions about their mental stability. And
guys who like Philippines probably also like abusive women, so.
I think they have a hard time getting women in general. And... I mean, you know, as far as that goes, but no, they're really a nice crocodile too. So,
but you used to have somebody you moved them off, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we moved them off to some really good folks, and just that's again, it, we really the last year have tried to condense our species down, and if it's a spare part, we weren't going to keep it or anything like that, you know.
So do you have a Sukis? Do you have West?
We have two. We have two Sukis.
Are you thinking of moving those off eventually?
No, we actually brought them back. Well, the first Sukis came in. It was from a zoo. They kept it for like 22 years, and you know, a lot of times they just change exhibits, and they need a place for it to go. And so we had a slot, so we took it, and then we have another Sukis that. We got from somewhere else. I think we have two males now, so probably we're going to have to do some adjusting at some point, you know. So,
yeah. But, Max, the salty I brought down to you,
mm-hmm.
He's he, she, whatever.
Passed away.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it a cold snap or?
No, we don't know what happened with that crocodile. That crocodile just was out there, then was dead the next day.
Huh.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, actually.
Dang.
It was a few days after putting it out from the winter, actually.
Really?
Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
I just saw a bunch of rattlers walk by.
They're actually in my house right now.
Oh, they're tight?
They got too hot. And so they were getting too warm, so we moved them indoors temporarily.
Yeah, the hots got hot.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
So is that where the display is now? Can people go in there?
No. Bye-bye, like, you go in there.
I want to see, man, they look hot.
So who are you guys with? Am I interrupting something?
Yeah, this is a podcast.
It's live broadcast?
No, it's not live, but you can join in if you want to. This is Michael Hicks. Yeah,
they invited me down earlier, but I just thought I'd sit here when I saw
you. We can do the whole group thing.
I don't know if the mic's for it, but
yeah, we just.
I figured I'd sit down here so I could get on to you for any lies.
Lies has truth. Oh yeah.
No, you go ahead.
No, it's been a lot of good personalities out here today. That's a lot of fun out here.
It's always gonna get better.
Yeah, there's gonna be more. So
excited for it.
So, don't have any more salties in, or
we just have the four. So we have two females and two males, and the two females I'm not real sure that are going to be actually viable for us because we got them. They were basically stunted animals that they were younger, and then as they were like 11 years old, they were literally like only like this big. So we've got them like triple in size, like a year. But if you don't get them quick enough to where you can like overcome the stunting,
they're going to be too small for me.
Yeah, so I'm not even totally sure we're going to hold those two. I might send them to somebody else who just wants to use them as an animal, or just say they have a salty in their collection. Or no, are the two big males? Well, they on feeding, they're not shy at all. But I haven't personally seen them for 4 days. But the females are not. If you go inside, you'll see the females like right away. They're right there. So,
how likely are you to meet up with James Watson in the nearby?
I talk to James probably twice a week.
Yeah,
we talk all the time. He wants me to go over there, and I'd like to go over there. And he's got a very cool research situation going on there, you know. Literally sees Tomissima off his back porch, you know.
Yeah. So, tell us about it.
Yeah. So it's really neat what he's got going on over there.
Need to sit for the airfare ticket for next August.
Yeah, James is a really unique guy. When he was out here, he's really unique, and he knows his stuff, and you know, he's really found himself a nice spot. You know, and it's just he always liked Japan and the Asian countries, and so and being over there for him is it's a great thing. You know, so.
But speaking of foreign countries with crocodilians, Belize, you did a little.
Oh, yeah, Belize, that's one of my favorite spots right there. So, yeah, we have a facility down there, and there's Morlaes and Acutis, and it's run by Marissa Tellez, and she does a great job, you know. So it's growing every year, and it's just keeps getting better and better. So it was kind of a slow startup down there. We started, and it was kind of like a plane taking off and bumping off the runway because there's COVID and everything else, but it's doing really
well.
Sounds
like my flight.
It's doing real well now, though. So, yeah, it's doing good.
I remember you talking about it when I was down here in 2019. So,
right
before all the crazy hit.
It's hard to believe it's been that long. It's been, like I said, it's taken a while.
Half decade, yeah.
The enclosures, look, we redid the enclosures about a year or so ago, and she keeps adding to it, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. So,
I need to get down there someday.
You should. Yeah. You guys want to do herping. You're herping up here in Texas. You need to hop down to Belize and do some herping.
I mean, I did go to Costa Rica, so.
Yeah, but Belize is close. Belize is a 2-hour plane ride, man.
We were in Colombia.
Yeah, that's good.
We'd like to go back to Colombia.
We did see wild smooth fronts down there.
That's
so.
Very cool right there.
Spectacles.
Foxes? Why is there foxes in our house? Now, hold on, everybody. Why are there foxes in our house?
It's the Ben guy.
All that Ben guy from the earth? Why is he bringing foxes to our house? They stink?
No, actually, they don't stink.
Are you getting some fox pelts? I mean, that'd be a nice gift.
Foxes stink bad.
That's true. No, they actually don't stink. I was sitting in there.
Is he just...
I met him.
Cool.
Cool. But do you care about foxes?
Apparently they're in the house now.
Every time
leave
he
in
laughs
house.
Like that, he's told you another lie.
Hold on, that's his tail.
That's his tail.
Now I know how to win poker.
What happens when you have a place like this, though? People come and tell you like the craziest stuff, and you just like take it for normal. Like, hey, they put foxes in the house. Oh, okay, perfectly normal day, you know? Yeah, there's foxes in the house. That's cool right there.
Should we tell them the spectacle came in the story? It may be off air.
Is it colorful?
We also did see wild capybara down there as well.
Yeah,
on the road,
it was huge.
So.
That's very cool right there.
Yeah.
Apparently, we'll probably put those in my house too. Everything else, put capybara in
my
house.
I did. When I was there,
what am I looking at there?
Spectacle. Yeah. Which the ones that around there had this really nice gold color to them.
Very, very pretty. Very pretty.
But
very cool.
Shoot.
Hell yeah, apparently there's foxes and elephants and everything else.
Lions, tigers, bears, oh my.
Yeah, no, that's really no problem. Oh, I'll tell you what, it's a scene. There's a turtle shipment in there right now. There's snakes in there right now.
Yeah.
Foxes are in there right now, and I don't know what he's about to put in there right now. So I don't really know.
I like that you got box turtles.
Box turtles are my first love.
Awesome.
Yeah, they are. They really
got the rare Kohia.
Yeah, those are kind of. They're probably the ugliest box turtle in the world.
They're ugly,
in the world.
They're
cool.
They're pretty aquatic.
And they're so we really we fill up their pond. about five times a week, and they go in there swimming, hang out in the water. But they're super aggressive with each other, though.
Yeah.
Oh, they'll fight. I mean, that was like bite like snapping turtles when they go.
Speaking of the alligator snapping turtles, we were just in there like an hour or so ago, and we saw the two of those albinos. One of them
hit
the other
on
the neck.
Those are common.
Oh, yeah. One of them rat lashing the other's neck for a bit.
I love those albino snappers.
Yeah.
That's a good looking animal.
It is.
Yeah, plate of lizards. That's really cool.
Yeah. Those are all great animals.
Those are great pets, too.
Yeah, they are.
Way better than a bearded dragon.
For sure.
Speaking of great pets that are better than bearded dragons, Komodo dragons.
Yeah.
Best dragon.
Yeah, that is for sure your best pet. I think everybody should have one.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, ours, I'm not going to lie, I was talking about this at lunch, and ours behave like a black bird. I mean, there's not a whole lot of it's just such a friendly animal. It'll climb right up on you and sit on you and everything, you know.
So. I only saw the one in there.
Batara Pass. So you're not keeping up with us.
I don't talk to you enough. You never pick up when I call.
Well, but Batara ended up with a and he was there's actually they found this in a couple different ones in the group. It almost acts like Lou Gehrig's disease. To where he just started losing motor control. So like one day he went in and he couldn't like move. He actually started having a seizure. So we came and we found him on his back, and then he flipped right back over. Well, then he progressively started going on his back and not turning back over. And then he slowly just started losing muscle control. This took almost like a year. And finally got to the point where we were basically just putting food back deep in his throat because he couldn't use his jaws to manipulate it at all.
At that point, it's just...
And we had every possible test known to man done with him from, you know, everything from machines to blood work, everything. And it's just, there's...
It's the oldest saying, right? You deal with life, you deal with death.
It stinks, man. That's why I was like, that's why I really, like, wanted to get another one since, because it kind of kicked me in the cells, you know?
I was going to say, it's different than the one that Rob Carmichael had. Back in the day, he had issues with.
They already knew though beforehand.
Yeah, this is a young animal, and like I said, we had two. We still have one, but it just was like it just started progressively, and now they found it in a couple other ones too. There's something in the. It's obviously genetic.
Have you done like a genealogy trace then?
They have it, but they did every other test. I mean, they tested for everything, man. West Nile virus, everything.
Maybe do a quick genealogy test, see if it's an inherited disease potentially.
Yeah,
because then that might just be a limb in the conservation program they have to snip.
I can't think the bloodline is that good in Komodos. I mean,
you
maybe know more than me, but I don't think it's that sweet.
All going inside too.
What else?
Yeah.
It's toasty down here in East Texas.
Yeah, particularly this time of day.
Yeah.
I mean, we're here in June.
Yeah, it gets really, this right now, it's going to be really.
It's getting nice, though.
Hey, how are we doing? I was trying to read her shirt there. I saw a turtle on there. I was trying to see.
Oh, it's the Turtle Day shirt.
Oh, okay, very good.
Yeah. The rest of the zoo people here?
Yeah, they're floating around in here somewhere, so. I think that most of them, are up on stage right now over that, or they're seeing the demonstrations that are going on. So, yeah, you bet.
Talk more about that when you meet. What kind of demonstration?
Every 30 minutes, we're doing some kind of feeding demonstration, you know. So I think they just did Temistima. I think at 4 o'clock, I'm supposed to take people through the building. You know, so there's some kind of list of...
So we still got 20 minutes to harass you.
Yeah, for sure. And
time is going by slow and fast at the same time today.
I was blown away. It was already 3-something, so I was like, God dang, you know. Because we've been out here since like 7, you know, because there's actually a lot that goes into this. I mean, I'm glad we did it and everything like that, but I don't know if you'd want to do it every year. I really respect those, you know, folks to do it, you know, year after year like that, you know.
Well, that's probably why they move around to a different facility each year.
Yeah, this is a division of labor. You know, I would certainly do it again. I just don't know that.
Give yourself a couple years break.
Yeah, it's fine, but it's fine. And it's really nice to have it in Texas because there's a lot of people here that would otherwise not go to one.
Yeah.
And it kind of gives you the opportunity to attend, you know. Yeah. And really, these things just come down to gatherings of like-minded people. You know, I mean, that's really what it is, you know. And you're here with people who like frogs or reptiles in general. And, it's just nice to, you know, kind of talk to the same kind of minds that other people. You know, you meet people out in the rest of the world.
It's like a potluck. Yeah, like a backyard.
Yeah, and that's really how it all started anyway. It was just exactly that, you know. So just a bunch of people got together, had a barbecue, and said, hey, this is pretty good. Let's raise $2,000. And just kind of grew. I honestly think CrocFest is probably, if you took just an honest look at it, it is probably the single most successful wildlife conservation fundraising grassroots thing. I mean, they've raised $1 million, man, from a bunch of people in their backyard. I mean,
and they've been consistent.
And they're very consistent. I can't think of one right off the top of the head that is even in that category. And it literally goes directly to the researchers. There's no middleman. Like, so whatever we raise today will literally go from here to the researcher. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's how successful it is and how clean it is. And
No bureaucracy.
No bureaucracy whatsoever. And it's been there a decade, and it's not had any
real snafus.
Nobody's putting their finger. You know, there's no real. It's been real good. You know, that's what I'm saying. It's really, somebody should actually probably make a documentary about it, because it's pretty crazy. You know, just a story of Christ. It's a legitimate story, you know.
Well, you got boys, don't you?
Yes, too.
You could be up for the task for that.
I don't think they're that much interested.
We see what it did to Dad. We don't want that.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, my son and I, we were just out there getting some stuff for the snack shack over there, and he's telling us on the, did you put him inside?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
And, So he's telling the waiter's dad, he said, you can't go 5 foot without shaking somebody's hand. And I said, well, yeah, that's just part of the thing. He says, when I go take over the park, he says, I'd rather just be anonymous. So there you go, you know.
Well, I was making a joke. It's like, hey, maybe I should get the Hercules out on my lap. It's just like a discount Dr. No or something like that from the show. But
so, yeah, it's just. It's just different perspectives, you know. So you get used to it.
Different social media.
Yeah. I don't mind meeting. It's fun to meet the people, you know. So
it is, yeah.
But there are times, like at the end of the day, you're going, yeah, I'm gonna go sit in my chair for 20 minutes and just, you know,
just veg out
here and do absolutely nothing, you know. So. But, yeah.
I mean, you've earned it. Like, how long has this facility been running?
No. The facility itself open to the public. We're still, I always use the young facility, and we're still kind of, because we grow every year, but I think we're kind of starting to get, for the first time in the last year or two, where there's a little bit of maturity coming, because we're, like, right now, I don't think I want
to. Finally grown up?
Well, I don't want to change the footprint. Like, before I was changing that, we're going to change this here. And now I think we're fairly at a point where I think our footprint will stay similar for the next couple of years at least, you know. Yeah. So,
what about all that acreage you bought across the street?
Yeah, we have all that acreage across the street, and I don't know if we're ever going to do anything with it, because I might just do nothing. Because I thought about opening up another park over there, and
Gator Lagoon.
I think we'd probably do like a safari or something over there, but it's just at this point I don't know if I actually want to do it. I might let my boys do it or something, you know, but. For me, I'm fine. We'll see.
So any other big changes since the last time I was down here?
I don't think so. I mean, to miss them, probably being outside is probably the biggest thing. We have actually those yellow Niles. We really started putting them outside. Yeah. So they visually for the public have been a massive hit. I mean, when people go ahead and they post like reviews and stuff like that, now it's almost always included the picture of those yellow Niles. For the general public, it doesn't like know reptiles. They know color. They know color and they know size and stuff like that. And so it's like, that's why albino alligators are so popular with a lot of facilities. It's because, just, you know, people say, oh, look, the white alligator. Well, the yellow Nile.
Have you seen Blanco yet?
The bigger one?
Yeah, he's on the other side of the park over there. He's been hanging out. He's in the mud puddle over there. He likes to hang.
He's covered himself enough mud.
He drives me nuts. He's got this giant pool, and he goes over there and sits in the mud puddle all the time. It drives me nuts. And
where Crocs, it's like you build a perfect place for them. They're like, nah, for this little mud pit.
But we're bringing in another dozen yellow now. So, and then that'll be it, I think. I think that'll be enough to... I think make the group. But what we found with the yellow Niles, and Africa has confirmed this, is they're not very strong. They're actually quite weak. And so what happens is, so apparently something happens with the immune system whenever you know, you get them to about five, and the nearest we can tell is when their hormones start shifting over from a young animal to a more mature, sexually active animal. Something happens, and it makes the I don't know. Something internally just happens with them, and because we lost it, they get compromised. And Africa is seeing the same thing with them. But if you get past that point, then they seem to be pretty bulletproof again. So.
It's just that initial transition period.
Yeah, it's really weird, and it catches you off guard, because like you got an otherwise perfectly healthy animal there, and all of a sudden it starts just, and it's all shocking. It's not, there's no drop down in it at all. It's almost,
you just find them rolled over one.
Yeah, it's just basically how it works, and it's super weird how.
Well, isn't that
kind
of the case,
you know?
A lot of times with Crocs is that you don't really know something wrong until they're belly up.
That's usually, yeah, they're very stoic animals in that regard, and you would, but honestly, there's a lot of animals like it too. Antelope are the exact same way. You don't show signs you're going to drop dead and show a predator that you're the target out of all your friends, you know. So
just, you don't want to hold, you don't want to be walking around with a giant sign saying "eat me."
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm trying to read the shirts on these things.
So
that dude's trip right there. You need to talk to him. No, I'm not joking. You really need to talk.
I'll try and get him.
I have one more question with the mouse.
Sure.
So, well, you have Malagasy, you have South African.
Yeah, so what we have is we have East Africans, we have South Africans, and then we have what we call the Madagascar line. And so what we do, and none of them are recognized anymore. Back when we first started doing it, there was like some sub, you know, divisions in it. And but what's happened now is they basically said these are all the same, you know, and it's just at most it's a locale, but there's no subspecies there. But since we've always had our groups separated, we just continue to keep them separated. Although I will tell you that my resolve in this regard is actually weakening, and I'm starting to, yeah, just because I'm thinking it is long term, and we'll probably keep the Madagascar separated still, but I don't know that keeping East and South makes any sense to keep them separated.
Yeah,
there's
probably a gene flow between those two populations.
Well, there is, but the nice thing is that like the ones we call East Africans, as we've isolated, are extremely yellow. They're extremely high yellow, just they're not like the T positive yellows, but
like
they're
strong gold.
Yeah, like as a matter of fact, we had some people out here the other day, and they like we had Ramses, which is the T positive, and he was there, but then there was another one right beside him, which is the very yellow animal, and the person said, well, that's very pretty in its own right, and that's what the East African line looks like, you know, whereas the South African line tends to be a little darker and has a lot of white, you know, so if you want, and so I think a lot of ways, and I've been thinking about, like, since the Nile groups, if we're not going to do, they could be lumped together, I'm actually just thinking about creating color-wise, you know, we're going to go and create the high yellow group over here, we'll keep the Madagascar group, we'll have the white group over here,
yeah.
And genetically and species-wise, they might be all the same, but we're going to have internal delineations on who is going to be with who.
You're basically going to become the croc equivalent of a ball python breeder.
It's kind of essentially...
I don't mean to insult you too much.
No, but that's that's how we'll be able to keep like our bloodline separated, because we'll be able to know, like, because right now we do it by our males. So like we have Atlas and his group, and then, you know, we have Ajax over here, you know, and there's Caesar over here, and it allows you to keep track of who's the bloodlines wherever we're doing. But by color, it makes it a whole lot easier. Man, we're letting everybody in here today. I'm telling you right now, we are getting scary. We're getting scary. I'm telling you.
They did frisk us, making sure
and well, they should have. Great to see you.
What's up, man? Great to see you. Glad you made it down.
Glad you made it down.
Well, I just heard about it like Wednesday.
Whole bunch of Houston Zoo folks up on that stage. You might want, I don't know if you want to go with them or not, but I mean.
Doing all right?
Yeah, they're good. Let me finish this off. There's two podcasts going, so we might grab you up.
But you had some questions about the original Ajax, right?
Oh yeah, what happened?
He just he was with me for many decades, and he was actually one of the originals. And we had that one winter where we had a snowstorm in the first part of December.
And then forget it. It gets cold out here.
Well, yeah. Then we had 2 weeks that snow melted, and then we had a second snowstorm, which has never happened again. And
even with all the crazy cold snaps, Texas had
those double snows. The only time we had it, and then we had it was like the perfect storm of badness.
Disaster,
yeah. And so we thought he was going to be fine, so we put him back out, and we found he wasn't. He ended up, you know, the cold got to him, and. Because we bring them in, you know, but it was too much with all the transitions and everything.
Yeah, it was a sad story. Most people don't know that Niles are pretty cold tolerant.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you keep, and we've kept them for decades, and our loss level is very low. I mean, we don't lose too many of them at all, but like if you have that situation in that year, we end up losing a couple of them, you know, it was pretty rough. And yeah, but he's got his grandkids out here and everything, you know, his son, yeah, so. they just his line still through here, and he was a great crocodile though. He was really gold, and he was just a really great guy. So.
Yeah, the official Ajax line as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, he'll never. You know, Ajax kind of like Ajax kind of like Shamu. So like, Ajax will always be here. One way or the other.
I was gonna say he's going kind of like a Targaryen.
Yeah, exactly. He's just always here. So like, you always have an Ajax. Like SeaWorld always has a Shamu. We always have an Ajax. You know, yeah. So it's just how it is.
Other than the Niles, which you know, Yellow Niles. Who knows how that'll go with the. Bring them in and all that. Anatomismus, working on other projects, you're thinking of doing the next.
Well, we actually have another now project about to work on. It's actually a luminescent green.
Oh,
it's insane. I have a photo of it on here. See if maybe I can find it.
Maybe afterwards I can edit it into show.
There's a pie ball now that I've seen.
Yeah, those I don't like as much. They are interesting. There's a couple really good pie ball Niles. I'm trying to see if I can find it. Yeah, I'll find it.
Like, I always make a joke of when it comes like. Ball pythons, a piebald ball python to me just. It just looks like something a bird leaves on your windshield almost when it's coiled up.
It's half jaw's baby picture.
Huh, he also has that half jaw.
That's half jaw's baby picture.
Oh.
That's him. That's him when he was a baby.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
Now he's living for long. Right? Yeah. But that's him when we got him. But, so yeah. But yeah, so we're gonna do those. But otherwise, we're gonna it's just Chinese alligators, Tamistema, and you know we'll probably breed Cubans 2 years from now. But
I gotta say I didn't see Cece, but
they passed. Eric, you're so far behind, man. I mean, you're embarrassing, man. These questions, man. Like, God damn. That was a 65-year-old crocodile.
I knew she was old.
Literally 65 years old.
That's pretty old.
Someone says, "Oh, you." But yeah. I guess I just missed.
We have 10 now. There's two more supposed to be coming. That'll be it. And honestly, I think we're okay at 10. I don't really. If we take the other two, which I told them we have room, I will. But
You gotta save some space for the babies.
Oh yeah, I'm okay with 10. It's nice, man, how like when we moved to Orinoco Group, it's nice to have all those bays be open. It really is. I mean, because there's a lot of bays back there, and yeah. It just gives you so much flexibility in the winter, you know. And it's just really nice to be able to have that flexibility.
Yeah.
So.
Getting kind of close to when you have to do a feeding show. So.
You want to ask me about any other old animals you have to identify in the last 2 years?
Gee, has your good manners died in the past as well?
Why? You're the host, supposed to know.
The host. It's
called host etiquette.
Yeah, because yeah, Joe Rogan brings scientists on to lecture to them.
He does.
Well, okay, maybe I'm called science, but you get my point.
Yeah.
But
I'll give you a species list next time.
What?
I'll give you a species list.
That'd be helpful. That'd be helpful. But,
I tease you, Nate. You're a good guy. You do a good job.
Yeah. I tell you I'm officially accepted into Ohio State. So.
No, very good.
Yeah, I'm going to be going to a nearby branch campus.
What's your
zoology.
Very good. So, very good. Proud of you.
Actually do something off. Actually good at that. So.
We have to put your height on the pole then officially.
I thought you said hide on the pole.
No, like, not your hide. Your height.
I was like, hide's like, oh, you're going to flee. It's going to be looking like some of those those mink pelts out there.
You guys this close to each other? How'd you come to know each other?
I just thought I had a Bruce Rampage.
Oh, really?
He lives out in Illinois, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's actually pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it's one of those romance stories.
Yeah.
Don't please stop saying it like that.
Don't deny me.
But yeah,
is
like
your secret coming out.
What
is your secret getting out now?
I'm not mad. That's for anything. But yeah, like back in April, I just woke up one morning. We were in the middle of the Andes Mountains in Colombia. I was like, and this all happened because 2 years ago, I thought you had some cool snake photos. It's like.
Sounds like a true love story in a lot of ways. And we found ourselves in the middle of the Andes Mountains. There it is.
And I found myself in the middle of Angleton, Texas. Yeah.
You can't really dig yourself out of the Andes.
With this old man staring at my eyes.
Oh, that's a good time. That is a good time. What time is it? 3:44?
Like I said, you had kind of something coming up, right?
Yep, we're going to go through the buildings.
Yeah. Well,
this is Mike. This is Mike Taka, by the way. This guy right here. He has.
You've been telling us to talk to him.
There's a lot of good people to talk to you out here, and this guy right here would be a great one to talk to.
Want
to
come on?
I talked
with
him earlier. He's a good boy.
I like listening to him because he's a little better rapport with podcasting.
No, I think you'll be just fine, man.
You'll be just fine.
He's got some great animals.
Don't let him want to eat.
Trying.
You, sir.
Yes.
Oh, the jokes.
I think I've seen you here about six years ago, 2019.
Yeah, that's why I was entering here. So back in June. So yeah, about 6 years ago, probably from today.
Well, I mean, as in the beard.
Did you come in to ask about Cubans? Or?
Yeah,
I remember that.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, I have Cubans. I was going to be in the midst of building the facility, so. Because he has two females, unless he got. I didn't listen to the earlier CODPAT podcast. Did he get rid of them? Or?
He still has to go. Yeah.
Okay, because I saw a couple of them, but they're smaller. He had two real big females.
Yeah,
so.
He said those ones passed away, so.
Oh, the Cubans did.
The big ones.
Oh man, that's a shame.
Oh, CC.
Yeah.
She's like what, 65
something like that. So.
That's a shame.
But that's kind of average lifespan for a croc. So.
Well, I would say yeah, but I got a dwarf that's 58 years old, and I'm 53. So, and she's still laying eggs every other year, but they're duds because there's no one there in the United States that has a real big male.
All right, man. Share with us, who are you and where do you find yourself in the field? Are we rolling?
Yeah,
the machine on?
Yeah, the machine's on, but you're kind of sitting right in front of him.
No.
No, it's all right. It's all right. Where?
Yeah, who are you? Where do you find yourself in the field of crocodilians? What's the scope?
Well, make a long story short, I lived in San Antonio, Texas, probably for about 46 years. Had my first Cayman. It was a spectacle Cayman at 12. My mom, I didn't have a dad or whatever. They split up, never saw him. So I guess her thing was you can get into a hobby, and that was my first hobby. So I've always had crocodilian since 12. Mainly the ones you can buy at pet stores, which were back then spectacle Caymans. I'd say in the late 90s, you could start getting dwarf Caymans, smooth front Caymans, you know. Always wanted main two species, which I have them now. Thank God for that. I had federal permits. Have been Osteolamus tetrapus and then Crocodilus rompifer, which is Cuban and dwarf crocs. I've got those through permitting. My first one that I got, her name's Pamela. She's 58 years old. I got him through a gentleman, which he's deceased now, but his name was Mike Bishop, and he had got it from Fort Worth stock, as in a baby from Fort Worth. So that's their, you know, that's probably the last lineage of Fort Worth's stock of gene pool, as you'd say. The Cubans, I've got two males looking for two females, of course. That's what I was going to see about talking with Chris to pair them up. Those I got from Gatorland. I used to deal with another gentleman, the second owner of Snake Farm, named John Mellon. He was probably the first individual to have the federal permits back in the late 80s, early 90s. Real good guy. He's at, you know, he owned Snake Farm, so he had all kinds of different crocodilians. But I guess I just kept through the years. My thing is not to try to do a hobby. It's more to be conservational and you know, like I have some Cubans are deformed because what they did is they didn't sell them, they didn't want to display them, but they were going to euthanize them. And I told them, I said, well, hey, while you're at it, I mean, don't do that. I'll take them if you don't want them. Because to me, even though they look like a reject, meaning with a big hump and a permanently crooked-esque tail, to me, he still acts like a crocodile. He goes, you know, he functions. He's a little deformed, as in, because so he can't jump out like his brother can. Real, you know, Cubans are known for jumping, and so
it's
I have
not
to
like
have
going to the wild. So why not give it a forever home?
Well, right. I mean, and my thing, kind of like a sanctuary thing, you know.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it, as in what, how I, you know, I've always dealt with the Cubans. I have dwarf Cayman now. I've dealt with smooth fronts. I had salties. I've had Merlets, I've had Niles, but those are larger animals. Where I live,
I live in Spring Branch, north of San Antonio. It's too cold. And it's a hill country. So unlike Chris here, he is the right for, I mean, Big Niles, of course, he is the right environment because it's more clay and they can dig their own burrows and withstand the winter. Now, don't get me wrong, he probably has some casualties still here. And, but what I'm saying is when it comes to Cubans, can't take the cold. Dwarfs cannot take the cold. Cayman, they can take the cold. I've seen videos that they're eating in 45-degree weather. Not saying I recommend that, but that's out in the wild, and they, you know, that's their purpose of that. But other than that, I mean, that's pretty much. So what questions do you have?
You mentioned you keep dwarf rocks.
Right.
We haven't really had a guy on to talk about dwarf rocks before, so what are those guys like in terms of captive care?
And personality.
Personality, I will say they're pretty sharp. I mean, but I always compare everything to the Cubans. To me, I think they're the smartest. Mm-hmm. They're just, they hunt in packs. They're just more, but the dwarfs, they're good. I mean, you have to watch them because they can be sneaky, you know. But they, like Pamela, I can call her by name and tell her to back off, and she will back off.
Yeah.
But she knows me, as knows my voice, knows, you know. So when I have to get in the enclosure, I tell her back off, you know. But then, of course, once I'm done, I give her a treat, kind of like a reward. I think that's a good thing. Flavio over there taught me about the reward system, as in, you know, whether you're shifting them over in a howdy cage or going from one enclosure to another, you know. But as in temperament, they are mean. She's, I don't know, it's hard to say. She's half mean, half, I mean, I don't know, I'd she say it's a 50-50, right. Yeah. But there's some days where she will lunge and snatch your face off if she can get it. You know, so I mean, that's, I mean, she, but for the most part, they're pretty, they're more of a secretive animal. Like, I call her Pamela, and I named her off of Pamela Anderson from Baywatch, because the ex-wife, make a long story short, she was always out. She wouldn't be in the water. She just always sunbathed, which I thought was crazy, because the other dwarf I have is real secretive. She likes to be hiding in the cave and just come out only at night. But then when you look at their habitat and their natural habitat and what they do, they come out at night, they venture on land 3 or 4 miles, hunt, then they come back, go in their burrow on the side of the river, and then lay their eggs. They're in the burrow all day, which is smart, beat the heat, but they're more of a secretive species,
also,
in my opinion.
They're also, you know, not the top of the food chain, where they're in their natural habitat. So,
correct.
Unlike, say, something like a Nile or something like that, it pays to be undercover all the time.
No, it does. I mean, and then they're easier prey for Aborigines, you know, for the meat trade and all, I mean, you know, the bush meat. And but in me, you can't blame them. Some people are like, oh, that's, hey, that's how they survive or wherever. So, you know, you got to expect that. But to me, that's a lot easier than taking on a 12-foot Nile.
It just makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
if you're in a survival situation, you're going to take the easy meal.
Right. I mean, so. And, you know, and that's probably half the reason why they're more vulnerable. But see, even till this day now, they don't have the exact numbers, which I know they've done some studies and had some field work. But, you know, are they critically endangered? Are they just vulnerable? And then they're talking about 2 or 3 different subspecies. You have Osborni and then, you know, regular Tetrapus. Tetrapus is supposed to get bigger. Osborni is supposed to be smaller, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of, they haven't, but it's like, to me, kind of almost on the least concern, because, I don't know, for the trade, I will say this, for the trade, they have the hardest hide, hands down. When I grab my animals, if I have to engage with them, literally, just bare hands, the scutes on their back and neck will cut you wide right open. And it's just weird. It's just, it's weird how that is. They're rough as hell. So for the trade, for the leather trade, they're no good. They're literally useless.
Well, but you got the arms for it.
Well, I mean, well, I used to nowadays. I'm like a one-man show. So now when I'm building my things, literally, if I live to be 80, I'd like to have an 80-year, you know, be an 80-year-old man, have my one young guy that helps me, and hey, you know, feed the chicken out of the wheelchair. And, you know, I plan on having him God die.
Well, I do know someone in San Antonio who would love to do that. So.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. If you want to ask him if he wants to do that part time, but I don't know, he's a pretty good guy, so.
Yeah, no, I understand. But no, I mean, the way I want to try to do it is I want to have them until I die. And then, you know, I have a trust, so they go off to certain organizations. Like, of course, if Chris wants them, then, you know, donate them, you know, when I go or whatever. But that's always been my passion on that, to keep them.
What kind of enclosures you got these guys?
Well, right now I got them in a I work a lot of hours, so I got them right now in probably by 12x12 enclosure that I made, kind of wood like what he did. I have them in a big old trough, and they're inside a mobile home thing in the back behind the property. The problem is right now is I was even going to ask Chris Dieter for some of his contractors, because I'm having a hard time. Since I live in the hill country, you have to make everything out of concrete. It's just not it cost effective. You're talking through the roof, because what I want to do is the facility, have it more like an elongated facility. People can walk in, have all their outside enclosures, but then you gotta be, to me, half the enclosure is gonna need to be brought out, have you carport type deal, because it's just too hot. It's even hot up in the hill country, even though it's like 8 degrees different than San Antonio. It's still too hot.
When it's the 90s and 100s, it's literally done.
Yeah, I mean, but what I'm saying is the average, to me, I'd say 85 is the optimum temperature for any crocodile. That's not too hot, not too cold, you know,
yeah.
For whether it's feeding responses or breeding or whatever. But, you know, because it gets hot here in Texas. But that's where Chris, he's made it ideal, because he has everything natural, everything, lots of shade and lots of mud, you know.
Yeah.
Which is sad, you can't see some of the animals as well.
That's for their own good.
Right. But I mean, it is for their own good, because they prefer that. I mean, and then
they got a perfect little dens they just dive into whenever they want to cool off and just
right.
relax.
And then too, even out in the wild, the Niles, people seem to forget they have droughts in Africa, and how they survive is they lay in the mud all day long in that heat, and that's all they are, is laying. That mud is that barrier to protect them from the heat, to keep them alive, even though they're drought and they're in pools where there's hardly any water. And then the rain season comes and they can get back, and, you know. But that's how that gets balanced out in Africa, at least.
It's funny you touched on the crocodile. You know, they're pretty obscure and not talked about enough. You know, we just missed them all. That's like in that same category.
Well, you're right. I mean, and then the gavials, it just, to me, it's like whatever's critically endangered. Even on the Cuban crocodiles part, I mean, I think we should be able to get with Cuba. I mean, Cuba, that should be no longer a problem. And I mean, but to me, there's still a problem, because you can't, because it's like I've always told everybody, my true conservation would be, to me, yes, it's cost more money, but breed the animals, breed the species, grow them up, rear them up to where they're larger than, of course, babies. Collect the eggs so you have a higher percentage hatch rate and all that. Grow them up, have veterinarians check them out for their health-wise and all that, and then introduce them back out exactly in the wild. Certain species of Philippines, Colette, she's real well known for that. She's the first one to breed the Philippine crocodiles. And there's some efforts, but like you say, the dwarfs, I don't understand the dwarfs, because it's always, okay, they're vulnerable. They're vulnerable, you know? You know what I mean? I mean, are they critically endangered? Are they just endangered? Are they vulnerable? Because vulnerable usually ups the scale of, okay, there's more than, you know, Cubans are critically endangered. Because one, they hibernize with the Nile crocodile, hibernize with caimans, they hibernize with, naturally, I'm saying, you know, because they have hurricanes blowing animals over to this island and that island and back and forth, and that's how they, you know, they're not notorious for to be seen in Cuba. Okay, I'm going to go from Cuba, I'm going to go to Puerto Rico, I'm going to head more south of Puerto Rico, and I'm going to be swimming in the ocean. Saltwater crocodiles, yeah, maybe even now. But, I mean, you're not going to see that with them, but getting back to even the dwarfs, I mean, they're always in Congo, Africa, deep, heavily forest areas, and they're, you know. And then it's weird too, even like getting back to the Niles, you have the different subspecies. If they're on that island of Madagascar, they're like a lot smaller. They're like geared to be only 9-10 feet, where you have the main And then, of course, Chris will know more about the knives because that's what he's always loved and specialized in, and, you know.
Yeah. But, so have you read Wolfgang Wolfram?
No. And the only reason why is I need to find, like I said, Pamela. I mean a big male, like a 6-foot male. And that 6-foot male needs to be Billy Badass to put Pamela in check. Because she just, I mean, Pamela at the time, I had her one time at Snake Farm, and she killed a 7-foot Siamese croc, way bigger than her. In fact, I don't have proof of video, but the owner told me, he goes, Mike, we got to move your animals to the back. I said, okay, well, why we got to move the animals to the back? And he said, well, let me show you. Well, I go there, and they have a nice concrete enclosure cinder block, and they had everything from 6-foot Nile, 6-foot alligators, 6-foot Morlets, 4 or 5 foot regular common American alligators, all these different animals, some bigger, larger spectacle caiman. And that one animal, my one animal, Pamela, because she's always been solitary, and that's not good. She ran all the other animals out, and as soon as they'd stick their head, even wanted to go in the water, she'd bulldog them and bash them, and that was it. And she was smaller than almost all of them. So she just, I mean, so when it comes to that, dwarfs can be a Billy Badass, I guess. Excuse my France.
You know. I've been more than most of the crop, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they're more tendency to get on the fat side, too. So that's why even like me, I kind of
watch it.
Well, yeah, and I kind of watch it, but I kind of make, a lot of people think I feed them too less, but mine are chunky, but they're not overly chunky, because when they get overly chunky, that you see them, they're lethargic. I mean, even if they're in the right and perfect environment, perfect food, they just, you know, they have a tendency to get fat. So to me, well, it's even like an aquarium of fish or whatever you have. I think you should keep them on the hungry side.
On the lean side.
Yeah, because out in the wild, they're opportunist feeder. I mean, they're apex predator, but they're opportunist feeder. Sometimes they can gorge themselves, sometimes they don't gorge themselves.
Yeah.
But then that's why they have fat in their tail. That's why they, you know, fat around their neck and different things.
I'll share a YouTube short with you. I think the Smithsonian Channel, they had like a documentary on dwarf crocs. You can't find it anywhere. But
right.
They got clips on YouTube, and they show them coming out at night, like you were alluding to. They're munching on millipedes and crabs and stuff like this.
Yeah, but they're
in a varied diet.
Yeah, well, here's another thing, too, what's ironic with them. To me, they're more a land-dwelling animal. They're more terrestrial than any other crocodile out there. Now, I will say the most adapted would be the Cubans, because if you look at their back feet, they have real short webbing, and they're more agile to be high walk. They can, on land, you know, they're more adaptable on land. But, I mean, but the...
Behaviorally is the dwarf.
Yeah, behaviorally, they'll go 3 to 4 miles away from the water, just on land, venturing on land, when you're thinking, okay, just totally on land. But then, of course, they go back. They know whether they're looking at the moon or, you know, that they know the sequence of going back, and if they don't, where they go back in. And they even have the perfect den almost. I mean, alligators have good dens. Sometimes they're out in the open. But to me, they're smart because it's in the riverbank, so you have to go up and over, underwater, go up and out, so no matter what the level won't get to wetting their eggs in the den. And the den will keep it where they don't have to have termites and all that. But I'm sure they still have predators. Like, I'm sure they have, whether it's otters or different other animals, snakes coming in and still get, you know, because
like
they
rock pythons or something.
Correct, yeah. Because they'll venture off and they'll eat the whole clutch and then some.
Yeah.
But
you mentioned you also did work with a dwarf Paleosuchus, the dwarf cannons.
Yes.
You ever breed those guys?
No. That's another thing. It's hard to get males and females. But I do know of a guy. Some of my stock is from New England, and they have bred them, New England reptiles, and they've bred them successfully. Real tame male, but then the male turned supposedly on the female last year, so he got rid of everything. I mean, it like tore her arm off and just, he lost it. I don't know what the deal was. And that thing's been breeding every other year. And so I've got some captive bred, captive hatched females. Because females, you know, they get about 3.5 feet. I mean,
yeah.
And then my work with them is I did have one that was, I would say, dog tame. But I mean, when I went to Snake Farm, I'd put some of my animals going through divorce. You know how you have to place certain things, because that's not your normal thing to get situated again. But they killed her in a week's time, man. Because she was just by herself, solitaire. So another thing, why I said by solitaire, it's not good to have them solitaire. They won't, you can't introduce them. You need to, you know, and there's a slow process that you introduce them to. You usually put cages beside each other. They can smell each other. They can smell each other. They'll know automatically male and female, and they can, but you want to introduce them slowly and not just throw them in there and, okay, keep your fingers crossed. Okay, go.
You don't want to turn into a gladiator pit.
Correct. Correct.
That opens up a lot of can of worms. Obviously, say if there wasn't permitting or legality and you had to decide between the two, dwarf caiman and crocs, which would be, I guess, a better?
Well, I mean, for what? Someone just to own one? Or I'm saying that, well, acquire one, the dwarf caiman's easier.
It's easier.
And then smaller than the smooth front. And yeah. The trigonosis, to me, those are average. I mean, there's a good 6 foot male I know. Like San Antonio used to have one in San Antonio that they always bred babies every year, and they can get big. But on average, like for the dwarf caiman, females get about 3.5-4 feet top, and the male about 5 tops. So that's the smallest crocodilian to even deal with. And they're genetically dwarfed, so they're not like you're, because you're, they're slower growing species. Some people power feed them, and then they kill them, because they're just trying to feed them, get them as big as they can and quick. And I mean, there's certain species that grow like an alligator. I mean, I know alligator farms, it'll take them 2 years, but they can get them reared up to about 4.5, almost 5 feet. And they keep them in complete dark. They take care of them, I'm not saying, but they rear them up just to slaughter. But guess what? Most of those alligator farms, too, people think, oh, that's so bad. That isn't bad, because they're not taking populations out from the wild. They're breeding them. They're captive breeding them. Yes, they're slaughtering for profit and hide and all that. They're not endangered. But we're the only country that even adhered to the Endangered Species Act, so that's why they're not endangered. If you think about it, because now there's over 6 million across from Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, and Texas. Texas has over probably 600,000 naturally. I mean, there's some, you can go to Choke Canyon, and I have friends that go fishing there, and that's only an hour and a half drive from San Antonio, and there's over 3,000 of them everywhere.
Well, it's starting to peer into Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Really? No, I could see that.
So it'd be real interesting, like a couple decades or what, how's it going to be the range extended north?
Really? That's wild.
Yeah.
So you're from Tennessee or no?
Oh, this is what I've heard.
Oh, you've heard, okay. No, I can see that. I mean, but here's the thing too, guys. The global warming, we won't get derailed on that. But to me, if you think about it, I think it's inevitable, because every year we're getting closer to the sun when it's rotating, okay, and then boom, then it rotates. So it's inevitable on that.
Yeah.
You know, we are causing more damage, don't get me wrong, but I still think there's all kinds of other processes that if you were to really have a thing and have a YouTube channel and go, this is all what's causing it, you'd have so many people ready to come on the loose. Yep.
Come on, your pitchforks.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
That's why I always have to take that. To me, the best thing to do environmentally is just conserve the wild places we have left and like clean up like plastic and chemical pollution.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Because you got things that in the ocean, whether it's the freaking sea turtles and, you know, you just netting. I mean, it's just...
Well, the Cuban crocs, like you said. I mean,
there
wasn't so much middleman.
You're right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But getting back to the species, the better species, I do think caiman. But to me, as in, I'm a croc person, because they're just meaner. They're just, I mean, me, what I would prefer if I had the two, I do definitely prefer the dwarf croc. Mm-hmm. They have bigger eyes. I think they're prettier. I think they're just, even though they're jet black and they're juveniles, they're a lot better. Well, anything juvenile, I got to admit. is more attractive, I think. I mean, I'm just saying for the...
You have to work with it. You'd rather get a juvenile.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, because, I mean, juvenile or babies. I mean, I bought babies because I had federal permits. Mm-hmm. One didn't make it. I mean, so babies are kind of delicate, in my opinion. You know, but when it comes to, I mean, I would say, I mean, but for anybody wanting it, one, do it legally if it's endangered species. And there's ways to do it. It's just no one wants to do that.
And you have to do it right. You can't impulse. Well, because part of those, you don't do it on impulse.
Right. I mean, because I've had them for years, but let me tell you, I've spent lots of money. I mean, I spend, every 6 months, I spend $3,000 to Rodent Pro to get rats, quails, chicks, guinea pigs, a variety of it. Then, you know, I'll go to the HEB, which is our store there. I'll go to HEB and I'll, you know, give them catfish nuggets and everything. Sometimes tilapia, but I think tilapia is a trash fish personally. But, you know, it's a vegetation fish even in some of our lakes. So if you take tilapia out, they won't see a picture of you killing it to make sure it's dead and you're not repopulate somewhere else, because they're invasive species. But what I'm getting is, getting back to the you know, you got to have resources to do it too.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's not just, okay, having the tank, you know, back in the 70s, you have a little alligator on the tank, and yeah, I mean, it's going to outgrow it. And even if it does outgrow it, and you still try to keep it in a smaller environment, it's just going to be detrimental. Yep, detrimental to its health. And all. It really is. I mean, but to me, I don't believe in overfeeding either. I used to breed snakes years ago.
Power feed
them. You'd have a reticulated python that, I mean, within literally 3 years, it's already a good 12 foot, about like that. And I just, you know, I mean, to me, it's not natural for the animal. Now,
the heads are still small, but the body's still big.
Yeah.
And you're just running that. It's like redlining a car's engine for 3 years just to get as much mileage on it.
Exactly. No, no, that's exactly.
Burn out.
Well, and the thing you got to think too, it's just like us. Unless you have some deformity like giganticism or all this different things, you know, trying to speed up the process, I mean, we overeat. It's not natural for us either. A lot of people don't understand that, but reptiles are different because they rely on the surroundings for the temperature and everything. But besides that, they are prone to be more apt to eating less food. Their metabolisms are a lot lighter than the mammals.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot. I mean, it. You know, like winter time, I only feed them once every 3 weeks, if that. Mm. And it's like they automatically know, because they go off feeding. They're like, hey, okay. Yeah. I mean, they automatically know like clockwork. But why did not overfeed them? Not to, you know, they know the cycle of the seasons naturally. I mean, whether they're in the house or a building or whatever, they know the.
They still sense it.
Yeah.
But I mean, people need to hear this because you can't just willy nilly your way into crocodilians.
Right. Well, I mean, you can, but I mean, a lot of people end up killing them,
or they
let them go, or they not thinking, and they, and this, you know, like Chris has made this environment adapted.
He worked for them. Nature.
Right. Right. He worked with nature, but he made this environment good for the dwarf crocs. I mean, not all the crocs, but I mean, he made it so it's adaptable to them.
Yeah.
So you got to make it. What I'm saying is your average
Joe Blow doesn't
consider that. Well, they don't consider that too. But I mean, but here's the thing too, the average little pet store, if they sell them, then they sell them. They don't care about the well-being of the animal. They just care about, hey, making that $400 sale and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, in the long run, it's sad because that is a special animal because that's,
well, that's why you don't see caiman in fish shops or pet stores anymore. Just,
well, they're there. Oh yeah, no, yeah. Okay. There are lots of them.
In the Midwest, I don't see that.
Right.
At all,
oh, you don't. Okay.
Across here and there, but no, not really.
Well, but here's the thing too. When you're in Texas, to me, this is the most lenient state for rules and all that.
Yeah.
other than tigers, because Tiger King kind of screwed that. I'm just saying, I have several friends that have tigers.
Well, you know about director, dude. He's working on a reptile series, and that's going to be, that might be detrimental for our hobby.
For who now?
For our hobby. The director behind, you know, Chimp Crazy and Tiger King, he's going to come out with a series on us herp guys. And,
yeah,
you know,
that's,
it's not going to paint a pretty picture for us.
No.
Even though, you know, you yourself and we do it right, but
right.
There's, you know, characters out there.
Right. So and what animals do you have?
I know, yeah, that's what draws people's attention.
Yeah, it
on
does.
The negative. On the negative.
So what animals do you own?
Not much. I just have a snake and a lizard.
What kind of lizard?
A blue tongue skink.
Blue tongue skink.
Real attractable, nice.
No, what kind of snake?
Yeah, she's a Chinese king rat.
Okay.
Kind of like our indigos.
Yeah.
Very similar.
No, that's nice. And you, what do you own?
Juby, rhino iguana.
Nice.
I just got a southern maruki scrub python, so.
Nice.
I don't know how long I'll have 10 fingers afterwards, but.
Well, I mean, they got attitude, but remember, to me, a snake, a lot less. I wouldn't say painful, because I've had 18 foot reticulated python nail me and try to wrap around me, and it's like, you know, that was just crazy. So it's pain.
Not,
you
but
like
not
to
croc
talk,
cloth,
but right,
mean.
Right. That's
yeah.
I've been
yeah.
bit by a croc, and luckily he let go, and I mean it was.
But
it made me think.
Got a pair of gopher snakes and a couple of iron jack carpet pythons.
Okay.
So
nice. So you're into snakes more, as in?
I'm more into crocodilians. It's just I live in Ohio, so
okay.
They get legally wise.
Yeah, but legally wise, I have a friend, a colleague that has dwarf crocodiles and Cubans.
Is his name Paul Bonner?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had him on the podcast before, so he's up in Cleveland, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he has them in his basement and all that, so I would think legality, I wouldn't think there'd be much, because you can't. They're not going to thrive in that cold weather.
And at the same time, it's just politicians passing rules to be just
okay.
to be politicians.
Right.
So. They passed all that laws after that Zanesville incident happened back in 2012, something like that.
Okay.
So that was the end of the incident where the guy allegedly opened up all his cages and popped his head open. He had released a bunch of tigers and stuff. But,
oh, man, that's horrible.
And but I'll bring up later, he did mention that he heard at the time that the guy was like calling another place going like the animal rights activists are trying to kill me or something like that, like a few days before that.
So he was a little bit nutty in the head, or
it might have been nutty in the head, or it might have been crazy animal rights extremists trying to make a PR nightmare. But
never know.
Right.
Yeah, but that same friend of mine, he actually grew up as a missionary's kid in Ghana in West Africa, and he mentioned that some people out there, they have dwarf crocs in their front yard and like the drainage canal, stuff like that.
Wow.
Just like almost like pets almost.
Wow. That is insane.
Yeah, makes you wonder what's their status.
Right.
You know, populations.
Well, right, because I mean that's the thing. I mean, but they've never, I gotta admit, I've gone to the crocodile specialist group meeting in 2014. It's been in a minute.
Uh-huh.
And even that was brought up. I mean, I went there the whole week to study it. You know, I went to school at St. Augustine for a week, paid for that, and you know, so that's where I got a lot of my knowledge. There's a guy named Kent Vallee, very knowledgeable. He was the first National Geographic guy to swim with regular alligators out in the wild, and I mean, very knowledgeable. All these people will stand behind him. He's very good. But yeah, I don't understand it. It's like they don't, and then the numbers, it's just, but then maybe they don't, that's not a species that they're going to be concentrating on.
Yeah,
you know, right. So I mean, it's just like, well, okay.
They don't quite grab the same headlines out to say Temistema or like the big,
right. Well, and then two though, but like they're Chinese alligator, they're critically endangered. You know, 100 to 200
yeah.
out. Well, yeah. I mean, and then the Cubans, there's a lot of different people that were breeding Cubans, but then some of them were hybrid, some of them were mixed with saltwaters or Niles, and I mean, so there's no pure genetic gene pool.
Mm-hmm.
To grab from, and then even some of the ones in Cuba are not pure,
yeah.
And they only are on two little
Zapata swamp,
and yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and that's it, you know.
And even then, the Sabata Swamp just got opened up for American Crocs to just cruise in wherever they want.
Right. So, I mean, and then
there's one thing that American Croc will do is hybridize with anything that moves.
Oh, yeah.
They're not picky.
Yeah.
They're not picky at all.
No. No. They're not picky at all. But I mean, that's a sad thing for the Cubans, because to me, Cubans are, well, they are awesome. I mean, I agree, because to me, they're the, well, I call them the velociraptors of the, because they're smart, they don't get that big, but they're very smart and agile. I mean, to me, they're more agile, and Flavio can tell you, because he used to train them at Gatorland years ago. And he has video. I mean, he's real good at training. Like, training, hands down. I don't think there's anybody on the planet that can train more than him. He just, I mean, I almost bought Lucy, but that deal was a big female. She was like 600 pounds, man. Big, massive.
I mean, a human?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big human.
Oh, yeah. She was, I mean, heavily bodied. But wow. Beautiful animal, but somehow the deal went through, didn't go through. But, and she went to the Gator Country in Texas near Beaumont, and they killed her. They killed her.
I know.
They left her in the pool outside. I was like, you gotta be effing kidding me.
Don't hold this against me, but I did intern there once.
Oh, you
did?
This
was before I came to Crockett.
No. It don't matter about doing. Here's the thing. Okay, talking about your intern, it's all about how you partake of it, how you grasp it, and how you what you get out of it. It ain't. I mean. To me, was that a wise thing? No, man. I mean, I was ready. I love the animal. Not for breeding purpose. She's just an impressive animal. Smart. Huge. I mean, and it's just sad, but I mean, there's a lot of people that do that sometimes. I mean, I've got a lot of places. They leave their animals. Oh, it's a big animal. It can handle the cold. No, it can't, man. You need to get your tail end out of there. And because why? That animal's relying on you to keep it alive in the sense. This isn't in this environment. Like, he makes environments for him here, which is great. Then he has winter houses, right?
Yeah.
Because of other species. You have to. I have winter houses. I mean, mine are inside right now because right now I don't have the time to build all their things. I'm trying to find contractors that can actually do what they need to do. Because some of these people say, yeah, I can make concrete pond, or I can make it, and then they can't. It's like they don't know the concept of designing and construction. Because where I'm at, you have to concrete everything in. Have to, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Gunite it with concrete like a pool, and you have to. That's the only way to do it. Because I'm in solid rock. So, it's great for, but it's not great for holding water. Like, that's another thing, too. You can use bentonite in other places, and the bentonite alone will make you a natural pool for years. It won't hurt the animals, whether it's turtle, birds, drinking, fish, whatever, you name it. It's ideal for them.
Yeah.
But, no, that's neat about the snakes there. Man, that's good that y'all have animals, too. I mean, I always like meeting other people that have reptiles. And I've got turtles. I've got Mata-Mata turtles, and I've got...
Oh, cool.
I used to have alligator snapping turtles. They changed the law of that, which mine died. I mean, he was probably 80 years old, about 90 pounds, but he now you can't have them because they're indigenous, of course, to Texas. But you could have them before if you had to mark them. Either you tattooed them, which I don't like tattooing, so I'd microchip them, you know, mark them like this. But mine died, but when it came to that, so now, you know, I just have common snapping turtle, and then I have a hybrid, I have a half. And I'm not saying I like hybrids per se, as in, it's interesting, it's going to be an interesting turtle, but it's half alligator snapping turtle and half Florida snapper. So hybrids, they can't touch, because it's, you know.
It's
but
not going to be
right. Well, but the thing is this, to me, it'll be interesting which species of genes takes over. You know, this thing looks more like an alligator snapper turtle, but it has just the features of a regular snapper turtle.
Yeah.
So it's kind of neat, isn't that? So legally wise, I can have that.
Have the skull and neck of a snapper and the shell of an alligator.
It has half of the alligator shell and half of the common snapper, but it doesn't have the pink worm appendage.
Oh.
But it has the head like it, eyes like the snapper, the common snapper. It has the eyelashes, or whatever I call my eyelashes, around the eyes like the alligator snapper turtle, but it has the eyes of the regular snapper. it's just different. I mean, he's got more scoots and more scaling on his front arms than even the common snapper or the alligator snapper when you look at two species different.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So the shell's half and half. There's some hybrids out there. I forgot the gentleman's name in Florida. He's the one who, it wasn't intentional, but then it happened, and he's the one who's bred all those. That's where they came from, that gene pool there. And, you know, because I think what happened is he had a hurricane down there, and it shoved animals and everywhere, and they're trying to look for him, and they're like, hey, what's going on? And then before you know it, that came, and then he's like, wait, this is crazy looking. And he could legally have them. He had the permits, everything, to have regular alligator snapping turtles. But so it's just, that was interesting. But other than that, I mean.
I mean,
as long as people are taking care of them, it is about resources.
And also not selling them as something else. Because snake hybrids, a lot of times they can be a lot more. Sort of plastic, and they can look a lot more
subtle.
Right.
They can be subtle.
Yeah. Well,
unless like a carpondra or something like that.
Well, but one
of those, green tree python hybrids that actually do exist somehow.
So. Oh, now see, I've never heard. That's the first I've heard of that one.
They're kind of like chimeras and crotches of pythons.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I mean, that's wild. I mean,
it is pretty crazy.
I used to have a hybrid, you know, man-made, but I'm not against it. Man's coming out, but he stuck with the same species, like a blood python, you know. You know, they have golden eye and all these other, I mean, and some of them are really nice. I mean, nice color, nice, and I think that's okay for man to do, is it? You know, I mean, they're taking care of them, they're, you know, they've perfected them and all that.
They're not going back to Indonesia, at least.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
I can't seem to find an exact image of it.
That's a
carpondra, yeah.
Well, that's pretty obvious.
Oh, now, wow.
Real pretty, but
that is neat.
I think there's like a...
I love the green because it reminds me, it ain't the... It's more of a lighter color green than your anaconda, but that's really nice. I mean, see what I'm saying? I don't know. Everybody has a different opinion. You're like, oh, you shouldn't be doing the species you're doing, and you're ruining it. And at the same time, to me, I don't know. To me, that'd be the same as them saying, okay, hey, you can't get married to a black woman. You can't. No. You know what I'm saying.
Sure.
So to me, that, I mean, no.
Scientifically, it's more like you can't marry a chimpanzee, but.
Right. But what I'm saying is, I mean, but if you think about human, snake, it's not like it was a snake and a turtle, you know what I'm saying? I mean, when you think about that aspect. But I mean, to each his own. That's the way I've come to realize in life, about this life nowadays, is to each his own.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, in this day and age, it's to
each. As long as you're not hurting anybody.
Right. As long as you're not hurting anybody, you're treating animals with respect and all that, and care and everything, that's the main point of it. You know?
Any other questions?
Probably later off there.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, like I said, I like to hear him talk, because it's been a while. It's been probably at least 3 years since I've been here to see Chris.
Yeah.
And he's like my mentor, isn't that? Then I had another gentleman that used to own Snake Farm. He was the second owner. He's named John Mellon. He's like another mentor to me. He mainly has monkeys now. I think he has monkeys and tortoises. He's kind of got out of the crocodiles. But he used to be one of the most individuals that had the most crocodilians. Because one, he owned Snake Farm. And then, you know, before it got transferred out, the third owner bought it. Him and I had to sex all the crocs. Because he wanted certain ones. He wanted to keep certain ones. And then certain ones let him go with the sale. But Snake Farm's blown up. But to me, I think it's blown up more mammals and reptiles now, you know, like a regular zoo.
Yeah.
I don't know if y'all have ever been to Snake Farm, but
can't say that I have now.
It's interesting. I mean, I can tell you a story, pretty much a true story, how it started, but not on a podcast, because y'all would be like, wow, that's wild. But you know, it has its history since 67, so it's been around a long time.
Yeah, that's about as old as my dad. So.
I mean, so, you know, it has its... But no, so where's your next internship?
I'm currently working at a construction company, but I'm actually going back to college to finally finish my degree. So
okay, no,
yeah, I'm going to Ohio State to get my zoology degree.
Okay, so, no, that's good. Yeah. That's good, man.
I'm from Ohio, so that's
no, where I'm no, at. Stick with it. I mean, it, so what construction? What kind of construction? Because my
custom home, custom barns, that sort of stuff.
Oh, okay, so. Okay, so regular house construction. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I just seen so many guys who work construction like, oh, I'll just do this for a year or two to find out what, figure out what I want to do. And then 20 years later, it's like, I guess this is my life now. It's like,
well,
I don't want to end up like that.
Well,
so.
Some people, I mean, I was a heavy equipment mechanic. I'm a service manager now, but I was a heavy equipment mechanic, you know, for years. And, you know, but guess what? No one seems to want to work, gentlemen. I don't know about this younger youth age, but so guess what? I'm the boss. I'm still going on service calls and working until 10 o'clock at night on a piece of equipment on the side of the road. So, you know, but it is what it is. I mean, it pays good, so I can't complain. And I'm just saying, but everybody has their profession. What's your regular profession?
Right now, FedEx.
Okay. Right now, FedEx is good.
It's not terrible, but I do want to get into HVAC. I'm actually taking a certification course.
Okay, no, that's good. That's good. HVAC is, I mean, in fact, I'm building a house and. Man, I can't believe it. Small, 1,200 square foot house, 2-bedroom, 2-bath. You know, so if someone came over, they can, you know, have their own place. It's like one side of the house is theirs, one side of the house is mine. It's kind of small, but nothing crazy. But you know, I've been building it myself. It's taken a while, but that HVAC stuff, man, it's crazy. For that little house, I got bids of $45,000 just to do the whole central unit, the venting. I'm just amazed. Yeah, no, it does. You're right. I mean, but I will say that's something that will never go away. So you're going to be in a good field. In zoology, I commend you on that. That used to be my, before I got married young and everything else, we won't go into that. Because getting married young, you need to do your careers like you do. But I mean, that was my ideal job to have as a zoologist.
I was even like university professor or something like that. So.
No, well, that's even better. Because
yeah, then I get the summers off to actually work on what I really want to do, start something similar to what Chris does here eventually. But, yeah.
Right. No. I will say the. The teaching thing will be more profitable than even a zoologist. Yeah. A zoologist, I know one in San Antonio. And he works with Bob, but he don't get paid nearly as much as he should, and he does that. I mean, it's not. I mean, that's a profession that you deal with animals. It's a lot easier to deal with the human than animals. The human can say, "Hey, man, I'm hurting right here. I don't know what it is," and to the doctor. And you can't get in the animal's head, whether it's a dog, cat, crocodile, tortoise, snake, you name it. You can't.
And at the same time, it thinks you're trying to hurt it, so it goes and tries to hurt you in return.
Well, that too, but here's the thing. Even being a veterinarian, there's more years, 13 years to be a veterinarian compared to 8 to be a doctor. Because I know my daughter's going to be a doctor. She's already a physician assistant working on her MD. So you know what I'm saying? When it comes to those things, it's just amazing. Okay, only 8 years, and you can work on a human being or do whatever, but yet 13 years, but why? The animal can't communicate to you and say, hey, this is exactly where I'm hurting right here and all that.
Yeah.
But I commend you on the zoology thing. That's a good thing.
Great having me on. Thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Pleasure.